Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Wish we had more positive things to say. We have great sponsors here. We've been mixing things up, hoping you guys are digging the new music beds and the new vibe of the BaltimorePositive.com. Of course, all of it brought to you by our great sponsors, my friends at Sportaculture, sending the magma lamp up. Luke, the magma's sort of like low and droopy right now. It's not even like bubbling right now. It kind of reminds me of what the Ravens look like in the trenches. World famous chicken at Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. And I saw the Justin Tucker coffee commercials and booting him up over the weekend. I've got the Royal Farms blend in the coal roofing mug. I got to get me some Baltimore Positive mugs around here as well. Our friends at Taharka, and I'm going to ship this out up to Luke in Pennsylvania and everybody else out there. We're going to be doing a very special promotion with Taharka over the next month. It's going to begin next week on Black Friday to ship you Baltimore ice cream to enjoy during the holidays. So even if the Ravens aren't getting fat and happy, you can through the holidays as they mix up the eggnog and the sweet potato casserole ice cream. Yeah, I wish we were a better football team, Luke. Let's talk about the trenches, brother. I'm still drying off from Sunday night. The Matt Skura thing, and you and I love Matt Skura. He's a great story coming back, even though he went to Duke and is from Pittsburgh. Don't tell people that this week. But the snaps are a problem, and, closer to the ball, they would say, what do they say? The IQ level is closer to the ball, right? Where Brandon Williams and Calais Campbell and Matt Skura and Marshall Yanda, let's throw him in here for good measure if we're comparing last year to this year, everything looks different on both sides of the ball, and certainly in the rain, even against a relatively pedestrian version of O&D lines from New England, the Ravens got pushed around, and that's got to change for anything to happen.
Yeah, I mean that was alarming to see. And look, when you're an offense that operates out of the shotgun or the pistol formation 97% of the time, and look it up. That's how often they are very rarely.
I have a feeling you looked that up. Is that 97 or 98? What was the real percentage?
It's usually trend. Over the last couple of years, depending on you can go off of a several week sample. They're in that 96 to 98% range of being in shotgun or the pistol formation. So, well, if you're going to be in the shotgun or pistol formation, you probably need someone who's snapping the ball consistently. And look, it's very easy to put it on the weather. And of course, that was a big part of it. But it's not as though that's the first ever football game that even the Ravens have played in the rain. I mean, think back to the San Francisco game last year. That was pretty darn ugly in terms of rain. You can't have your center not be able to snap the ball. Last week he had the cut in Indy. I mean, it was well documented. You could see it on the sideline. He was bleeding pretty good. And maybe that was still a factor. I know John Harbaugh was asked about it. We didn't get to talk to Matt Skura after the game, but Harbaugh was asked about it. I asked Lamar if Skura had said anything to him as far as what was going on, if he had an injury, had a finger taped together that he dislocated or something like that, and didn't hear anything of that nature. But Nestor, it kind of reminds you a little bit of Steve Sachs' Chuck Knoblauch disease if your center can't snap the ball properly. I mean, that's – it's not a whole lot you can really do. I mean,
you're going to lose the game if that doesn't. And again, to your point, like if you snap it 66 times in the rain, two or three of them aren't going to be very good. I mean, yeah. But that is just more to the point of what they do in moving the ball around and not throwing the ball particularly well in the rain, that it leads to even more problems when, first and 10 becomes second and 25, right? Literally.
Yeah, but there's a difference between having a few snaps that aren't perfectly online and having what we saw on Sunday night, which was
disaster.
Snaps that were not even remotely close. Yeah. I mean, look, a lot of people were beating up Greg Roman in the play call to have Mark Ingram line up in a wildcat and fourth and one, and I'll hear that, but we didn't even get to see what the play would look like because the play ends up being aborted because it was such a bad snap, and then 6 minutes to go. You have first down, and you snap a ball to Lamar Jackson that is just so not even close that you completely blow up the drive there. I mean, it's – you can't have this. You just can't. Whether it's Matt Skura, whether it's Pat Patrick McCary, whether it's Tristan Colon Castillo, whether it's Ryan Jensen, whether it's Matt Burke. I mean, you just can't have that.
By the way, they threw Jensen out of center in Tampa. You saw that the other night, right?
I don't think that was because of him. I think it's because of some other needs that, and what they put, I guess, A.Q. Shipley, another former
A.Q.,
Raven,
yeah, he was also in
center.
My phone. Good man,
yeah,
A.Q.
yeah,
Shipley.
But you just can't have that. When you're, we know, even last year this was true because of the point that you make, and, you know, we talk about this as far as how much they want to pass, how good they are at it, you know, how effective they are, all of that. But we do know when you are a team that's relying on the run more so, when you're relying on being more efficient rather than throwing the ball 45 times, and I'm not saying they should throw the ball 45 times, but to be very clear, but you can't have things like snaps, pre-snap penalties, illegal formations, which have become a weekly occurrence, which, again, something else that's, you can't line up properly. We've seen that. We saw it multiple times against Philadelphia. We saw it against Pittsburgh, I believe, at least once or twice. We saw it against Indianapolis last week. We saw it on Sunday night. I mean, these are things that – these are requisites. I mean, if you're going to be anything of note whatsoever, these are things you just have to do well and not even think about it. It's just assumed you're going to do it well, and they're not doing it well. So – I'm not trying to pick on Matt Skura too much here, but I mean, come on, man. And he'd be the first to tell you that. But I mean, that was just so far below the bar, snapping the football. And I get it. It's rain. And, you know, to your point, you're going to have a couple snaps that are probably going to be, you know, it's one thing to be a little off center. You know, Lamar has to move his hands to the left or to the right. You know, I mean, I can understand that. But when you're talking about, you know, I mean, he had one last week that he snapped off his foot, right? I mean,
you're have to give him a chance.
Yeah, I mean, you're just seeing some stuff. Like I said, it kind of reminds me of Chuck Knobloch not being able to throw the ball to first base, you know, years ago.
Steve Sachs.
Yeah, Steve Sachs disease, as I mentioned. So, you know, you just see that, and then you compound that with not having Ronnie Stanley, and as a result, Orlando Brown's over at left tackle, and DJ Fluker's not getting the job done at right tackle, and now you're moving Patrick McCary, who's more of a center, who was already playing right guard because Tyree Phillips is out. Now he's playing right tackle.
Marshall Yonda is skinny, eating vegetables on a pig farm in Iowa.
You have Ben Powers at right guard. I mean, you know, some you look at some of this and you say, yeah, why should I really be all that surprised that they're struggling offensively relative to where they were last year? I mean, that's a lot of moving parts, but not in a positive direction. You're moving away from where you were last year. So, I mean, you just look at a few of those snaps from Skura. I mean, those are drive killers right there. I mean, it directly killed them on a 4th-and-1, even if you hated the Mark Ingram call there. And believe me, I hear the sentiment totally on 4th-and-1. Why isn't the ball in Lamar Jackson's hands?
You're trying to out-trick Bill Belichick on a rainy night in New England, huh?
But if you're going to out-trick him, and look, remember, they ran a similar play against Houston late in the game in week 2. Maybe it would have worked, but you don't even have a chance if you can't get the snap back to the guy. And, you know, when you're six minutes to go and it's a one-score game and, you know, it's first down and you're trying to get some mojo going and you snap a ball to Lamar Jackson that's just so far offline that, you know, he's having to do everything he can just to cover up the football, let alone minimize the yardage you've lost. I mean, that's just a drive killer, especially considering where the elements were. So, you know, certainly, again, to not acknowledge the rain would be unfair to Skura, but at the same time, that wasn't just about rain. Something's going on there. Whether it's the finger that he cut last week still bothering him, whether it's in his head now, which if you're the Ravens, you pray it's not that because, boy, you start getting into sports psychology and things of that nature. You've seen some great players in various sports kind of go down the tubes with and when it starts getting in your head, you know, when it's mental more so than something physical. But, you know, it's just you got to be better in the trenches. And, you know, I guess this is where it brings us to the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, no Brandon Williams. He leaves the game very early in the first half. Didn't have Calais Campbell. I already had some relative concern because anyone who'd watched New England the last few weeks, and in fairness to Cam Newton, he had looked a little bit better throwing the ball the last couple weeks after, you know, his first couple starts coming back from being out with COVID. He looked awful. I mean, he just looked absolutely terrible. He had looked better the last couple weeks, but the Patriots, John Harbaugh said it after the game. Judon said it after the game. Chuck Clark said it after the game. They knew the Patriots were going to try to run the football now. And when you're in a position when you don't have Campbell and then you lose Brandon Williams, you still have Derek Wolfe. And I thought Derek Wolfe played pretty well. But going from Campbell and Williams to Justin Matabuke and Justin Ellis, I mean, that's a pretty substantial drop-off. And look, they weren't not putting it all on them. There were established starters who did not play well in the trenches. But we talk about it all the time to the point where it's cliche, and it's one of those talking points that, you know, is right up there with winning the turnover battle. I mean, it's kind of a the no-brainer statement, but you lose the battle in the trenches on both sides of the ball, yeah, you're going to get beat. And that's exactly what happened to the Ravens on Sunday night. And now the big question is, when are you going to get Calais Campbell back? When are you going to get Brandon Williams back? Because, you know, Derrick Henry and the Titans are coming to town, and we saw how that story went last January.
Well, this is a good time to ask about Brandon Williams, because they're a different team without him historically over four seasons now, right? Like going back to Wembley, that when he's not there, and, you know, and I don't want to say he's maligned or you know, you don't think much of him and he's there. You know, he got paid, and all he does is quietly be a part of a 14-2 team to some degree. And then the minute he's missing, you can't stop the run.
Yeah, and I'll openly admit I'm as guilty of this as anyone. That, not that I have ever suggested that Brandon Williams stinks or anything like that. But
there is a – why did you give him all that money?
Well,
you
know,
what makes him special?
Right? Well, but it is also because of how the league has evolved, and it is more of a pass-first league. And look, when the Ravens go up against teams that are more pass-heavy, Brandon Williams doesn't make as big of an impact. But when you don't have him out there and teams see that you can't stop the run, guess what they're going to do? They're going to run the football on you, and they're going to run it and run it and run it some more. And, you know, we saw against Philadelphia what the Eagles were able to do when Brandon Williams was out as a close contact on the COVID list. We've seen it. You know, we saw it against Cleveland in week four last year, the famous post-game a spat that he had with Earl Thomas in the trainer's room after the game. Williams didn't play with the cranky knee. And we saw it. I mean, the big example, you mentioned London, but remember, the lowly Chicago Bears came to town and just absolutely gutted them from a run game standpoint to the point where Mitchell Trubisky, a rookie quarterback, came into Baltimore, and he didn't do anything, but his running game beat the Ravens. So there's all kinds of evidence. And what made the problem even more magnified was Calais Campbell was brought in. Yeah. Not to say that they didn't want his pass rush prowess. And he does offer that. And he's led the team in sacks this year, entering week 10. But first and foremost, they wanted him as a five technique and a guy who could slide inside when they go to sub package, that he's dynamic against the run. So you're missing those two guys. And, oh, yeah, Michael Pierce isn't part of the picture either. He's not on this team anymore. You just look at who they had up front. And I know Matt Judon said after the game that, you know, they didn't live up to the standard, and there's no excuse to give up that kind of yardage in the running game. And, it's fair saying that. And they needed to be better, no question. But to sit here and say that I'm shocked that they struggled to stop the run without Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams, I'm not shocked in the slightest.
Well, knowing all of that, we weren't as concerned going into the game. I mean, I sat around on Sunday watching the other games, making food with my wife, working on Baltimore Positive, doing stuff. And I just – it didn't occur to me that the Patriots might be good enough to do what they did in the rain on Sunday night, especially with all the players missing. Not Nick Boyle, but Stanley, Smith, Ford, all of the missing ingredients – I still thought, they'll be fine. They were not fine. They are not fine right now. And I think we're going to spend much of the week talking about this fat back the Tennessee is going to bring in and how that gets stopped. And, oh, by the way, Steelers won again too. And we're probably not going to talk much about them in December, but we're going to talk about them next week because of Thanksgiving. They have two games in the next 10 days, and they're banged up, and things have gone poorly, and they're even more banged up getting off the bus from Foxborough on Monday morning than they were on Sunday night. I don't want to say it's code red, but I think all of us are beginning to become concerned as to whether this really is the kind of team that can win in January.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly the concern in the code red is appropriate if you're looking through the lens of wanting to be the number one seed, if you're looking through the lens of wanting to win the division. And obviously they still want those things, but you just look at it and, you know, they're three back of Kansas City when you take into account the tiebreaker. And Pittsburgh, I mean, I see people talk about this on social media, and I get it. And look, from a true talent level, I still say Kansas City is absolutely better than Pittsburgh, and I'm not sure it's all that terribly close. I think Kansas City remains the class of the conference, but Steelers are still undefeated, and you have to give them credit. And look, I know you can look at their schedule and say, well, you know, there are certain teams like the Giants that they played and, you know, didn't look all that good. And you can look at some, you know, they almost lost to the Cowboys down to what, their fourth string quarterback. I mean, but they're getting the job done and they beat the Ravens. And yeah, everyone can say, well, the Ravens ran for all this, you know, all these yards and they outgained them. And you know what that sounds like? The Tennessee Titans crying about losing to the Ravens in 2000. I mean, go back and look at the playoff game. The Titans outgained them. It ultimately comes down to, are you making the plays that you need to make to win the football game? And Pittsburgh's done that. So that aside, we know, and the Ravens have been in this position, you know, their two Super Bowl wins did not come being a number one seed or a number two seed. I mean, they were a wild card in 2000. They were, you know, they're a division winner in 2012, but at 10-6, certainly.
But
wasn't
they also
anything.
Had pretty good health at the end of those years, and pretty good.
It was, yeah. But if you remember that 2012 team that struggled as much as they did, go look at their injury list in December. I mean, they were really banged up. So,
well, Ray Lewis wasn't playing, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, Yanda was banged up. That, I mean, they had a lot of guys banged up in December. Now, to your point, they did get healthier, and you do look at where the Ravens are now and say, all right. You assume Calais Campbell will come back, you know, whether it's this week, whether it's next week, whether it's the week after that, after the Thanksgiving game, regardless of what that means for these two games against Tennessee and Pittsburgh, but you assume he's going to be back and healthy. Same with the Brandon Williams, you know, same with the Jimmy Smith, you hope. You know, he didn't play on Sunday, even though probably not that terribly consequential considering New England didn't do a whole lot, you know, trick play notwithstanding, throwing the football. But you know, you're going to get some of these guys back, but you know you're not getting Ronnie Stanley back. You're not getting Nick Boyle back. You've already had so many depth injuries at corner, and you know we haven't mentioned it to this point. Terrell Bonds, who, look, it's kind of crazy that a guy that was on the practice squad not that terribly long ago, he goes down, and I'm not saying it's a crushing injury by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, depending on the severity there, that's another corner that goes that, you know, potentially you lose after Khalil Dorsey went on IR.
Well, nothing else, but he was in the program. He knew the playbook, right?
Right,
like
right.
Well, when you start bringing guys in off the street in week 12 and saying, there's Ben Roethlisberger, go figure out Juju Smith-Schuster next Thursday night, when they were watching the game on television on Sunday night, that's problematic. And that's where they're heading in the secondary right now.
Yeah, and we've said this for a while, and again, with the assumption that Jimmy Smith comes back, he missed the week with an ankle. From what I understand, if you kind of look at their injury report every week, and to Jimmy's credit, he had played every game up until Sunday night, he had a different ailment just about every week being on the injury report. I think, yeah, the ankle's bothering him, but I think he had three or four other things bothering him, and you almost wonder if the Ravens kind of said, we need to shut you down for at least a week to get you healthy. But, you know, with corner, fortunately, the only one that they've lost that was really going to factor heavily into what they did was Tavon Young. They still have their top three, assuming Jimmy comes back in the, you know, this coming week or the following week for Pittsburgh, whenever it is. But they're now in a position where one injury away for, you know, any of those three guys going down, Peters, Humphrey, or Jimmy Smith, now you're counting on a Tremont Williams, who they just signed, who, look, has had a really nice career. know, longtime Green Bay Packer. And for, to his credit, at age 36 last year, 37 now, but his age 36 season, he played really well for the Packers last year. Pro Football Focus graded him out very highly. So, you know, it was kind of had been a surprise that he wasn't playing yet this year. And there had been an assumption that he was going to be winding, you know, he would wind back up with the Packers at some point. But, you know, now you're in a position where you're one injury away from leaning on someone like that very heavily. And that's what happened to them on Sunday night. And, you know, he was fine, but it's one thing to be fine against New England, a team that at this point, Jacoby Myers has done a nice job for them the last few weeks, but they don't have any pass catchers that scare you. But Tennessee has good pass catchers. We know Pittsburgh has good pass catchers. We sure as heck know Kansas City has great pass catchers if the Ravens are fortunate enough to cross paths with the Chiefs in January. So, you know, it's just another one of those things that, you know, they're teetering there. It's okay for right now because they haven't lost the top three, but you're now down to what, having lost Tavon Young, Anthony Averett, who is supposed to be back, Khalil Dorsey, who is supposed to be back. We'll see with Terrell Bonds. I mean, the knee injury did not look good, and they lost Amon Marshall in training camp. I mean, you're kind of down to what? You're, as far as your depth now, your number nine corner, your number 10 corner, as far as what the hierarchy was envisioning it at the start of training camp. So, you know, that was irrelevant to New England on Sunday night, the cornerback depth. But you know that's going to be really important coming up here, and you're just holding your breath that, you know, when you see Marlon Humphrey holding his shoulder at a couple different points on Sunday night, you know, he finished the game. Not saying,
dude, I saw Marcus Peters limping at one point, right?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you see that now, look, it's terrible anyway because we're talking about Pro Bowl talents. You know, I mean, I don't care how good your depth is, you don't want to lose those guys. But now you're in a position where, I don't know, you're starting to think about Ronnie Prude and Willie Gaston. And I think back to that 2007 year, Nestor, where they lost everyone at the cornerback position. And they had so many injuries in the secondary. And, you know, you think back to Rashawn Melvin in 2014 and Danny Gore. You know, this is kind of the territory they're in now with their depth in the secondary. So you have that. You have the concerns up front with Campbell and Williams and not knowing what their short-term status is going to be. It's just, it's unsettling. And, you know, that's unfortunate because we know with the offense not playing at the same incredibly high level that it did last year, they've leaned that much harder on their defense. And, you know, their defense let them down on Sunday night.
He is Luke Jones. You can find him, Baltimore Luke, out on Twitter and social media. He'll be in Owings Mills this week. It is a normal week. We don't have a whole lot of 1 o'clock Sunday games left on the roster here. Things are going to get a little weird quickly. It's weird sitting around all day Sunday and this past week waiting for the rain on Sunday night. But Thursday night games and Thursday night game against Dallas and a Monday night game against Cleveland. The road ahead fraught with peril for the Ravens, especially now without Nick Boyle and without Ronnie Stanley and moving parts. You can find all of us in our new home. We're at Baltimore Positive. We've taken WNST.net and expanded it. We've had great conversations this week with our two senators, Ben Cardin, as well as Chris Van Hollen. We're expecting Governor Larry Hogan to chime in at some point and justify voting for Ronald Reagan. But Don Moeller will be joining us all week long. We got new doings in the Ville with Franco's 818 opening over there. My friends, I'm going to put this shirt on later on in the week at El Guapo here. Look at the El Guapo movie set on the back here. But I'm going to get some quesadillas in here, probably make some margaritas before it's all over with. Our friends at Royal Farms delivering that chicken for you as well as coffee each and every morning. Coffee's the special right now because it's a little chilly outside. They make a nice cup at Royal Farms, just like my pal Justin Tucker talking about on the TV commercials. Get in there. Make sure you're downloading the app, pumping your gas. Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast, supporting WNST, as well as our friends at Blondell Miller Schuler. Todd Schuler is going to be here this week. He was a great guest last week. You want to check this out at Baltimore Positive. You know, Todd was a local delegate and won and lost a race that involved him all day, all night, watching ballots get counted by Republican and Democratic officials. So kind of an interesting little piece. You might want to check that out with my pal Todd Schuller. He'll be back on this week as well. Well, Bill Cole will be here from Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy talking all things COVID. He's had some COVID issues going on like all of us right now. A reminder to everyone out there, please wear your mask, wash your hands, be safe. Let's try to get through this crazy, crazy time in all of our lives and stay safe as we get up on Thanksgiving next week with the Steelers and the holidays and hopefully some eggnog ice cream. Our friends at Taharka are going to be offering a very, very special deal. If you're familiar with Taharka ice cream, they are local, serving up social change. They have a huge announcement coming next month as well at Taharka. But one of the big announcements is that we're going to be delivering this ice cream to your door throughout the holidays, $15.70 off of an order of eight, which is how they deliver. It's usually $56. Going to be $40.30 on the website at Taharka Brothers. We'll be telling you more about that. But you're going to be able to get the eggnog. You'll be able to get the peppermint bar, the sweet potato casserole, as well as my new favorite, which is the pumpkin spice latte. I didn't know I was this much of a pumpkin guy. Maybe I'm more of a pumpkin guy than I thought I was more of an apple cider guy. They have an apple crisp that they're doing at Taharka too that I have not tasted yet, but I'm looking forward to it. This is the Honey Graham. Taharka Brothers working with us this month to deliver ice cream, and I'm going to be asking everybody in the Baltimore Positive community to do this because I want you to taste how good it is and the difference that local makes. Taharka Brothers ice cream. Our friends at Planet Fitness still socially distanced, staying safe. Teddy Savage is going to come on later on in the week. Vicky Brick's going to be coming on too, talking about trying to stay fit here amidst very, very tough conditions here in the winter. And Luke, to bring you back into this thing, you're talking tough conditions. Tackling Derrick Henry. Where are you on tackling Derrick Henry on Sunday?
Concerned.
Yes. I mean, yes, very much so. Right.
Yeah, I mean, what he's able to do. And look, if Calais Campbell's back, if the Ravens get good news on Brandon Williams, I feel better about that. And there were other reasons they lost to Tennessee beyond Derrick Henry last January, to be very clear. But, I mean...
Well, not making it on fourth and one, right?
Right. But yeah. But any thoughts of not having those two studs up front against that Tennessee offensive line? And look, the Titans have been sputtering compared to where they were a few weeks ago when, you know, they're playing Pittsburgh in a battle of the undefeateds, but you know, that's still a team that has a lot of firepower offensively. And you know, I'll go back to what I mentioned as far as some of the depth at cornerback and, you know, having a little bit of concern there, knowing Jimmy Smith's been banged up so much. I mean, you know, Tennessee has some weapons in the passing game that are something to deal with. And, you know, Ryan Tannehill hasn't, you know, he, for as much as everyone assumed he was going to turn back into a pumpkin, that hasn't really happened this year. Again, like I said, recently Tennessee's been a little more, you know, questionable, but a lot of that's been their defense has been so disappointing. So
it's fascinating to me to have a guy like Tannehill that for any of these plays, Lamar comes out like a rocket. Mahomes takes a year off, but comes out like a rocket. Aaron Rodgers, and yeah, even in that generation, God, we saw what happened to Drew Brees the other night. You know, I hate to see these guys get injured at this point in the season. But when you think about these overlooked guys that get drafted and don't get a real shot, and the Josh Rosen types, and all of these names that you and I went to Indiana. Look at Cam Newton, right? Beat us on Sunday night, right? But all of these second-hand quarterbacks, for whatever it is, even Flacco last week, third-hand, throwing it around for the Jets. But at some point, there's going to be a blossoming of some Rich Gannon. You know, I mean, one of these guys is going to be really good in their 30s because they learned something in their 20s. And, I mean, look at this poor kid from the Jets now, right? Like, he looked like he was going to be – now they're going to throw him out with the bathwater. Some of these guys are going to go somewhere else. And as Marvin Lewis always said to me, we do get smarter as human beings. We try to anyway. Tannehill was a guy with all the skill, right? I mean, so look at Teddy Bridgewater after the injury to come back and be – the skill set, the mind, the arm, the ability, the vision for the game – I always think that's got to get better at 30, 31, 32, like Ryan Fitzpatrick. So I'm never shocked when a Ryan Tannehill, a nuts and bolts, not a Dak Prescott that everybody overlooked for three rounds or Lamar Jackson, but these top 10 quarterbacks, when they die on the vine somewhere, Tim Couches, I always think they're going to resurrect somewhere because I think somebody could fall in love with them, right?
Yeah, and I mean, there have been plenty of guys who've gotten second and third chances and couldn't do it there either. But I think you're, I think it's fair. And I for me, yeah, you get smarter. Yeah, you learn things. But I also think it just speaks to how important the other variables around you are. Yeah. Would Tom Brady have been great if he had been drafted elsewhere and eventually gotten a chance? Yeah, I have little doubt about that. I mean, at some point, you just have to recognize Hall of Fame kind of greatness. Do I think he wins six Super Bowls somewhere else other than being with Bill Belichick in New England? Probably not.
Dude, I disagree. I strongly disagree with you on that. I think if Tom Brady would have been Tim Couch and wound up in Cleveland with a bunch of stiffs around him, you may have never heard of him. And maybe I'm foolish. With Michael Jordan, it's different. I think in football with a quarterback, I think there are buried Todd Marijanoviches and, you know, buried quarterbacks that may have somewhere else, not have David Carr, you know, just guys that if they would have gone to the Steelers or gone somewhere decent with decent coaches and not a vagabond. Half of these organizations are vagabond. Half of them, you know, in the by and by.
But I was just making that point that where you wind up and – you know, your coaches.
But you said Tom Brady would have been okay anywhere. I don't know. I mean, I don't even want to give that to Tom Brady.
I think you're not giving him nearly – I mean, that's insane to suggest that. The guy's probably the greatest quarterback of all time, at least in the Super Bowl era. I mean, you got to give him credit if you know, just because you don't like the Patriots. But
no, I'm not even taking that away from him. I'm saying the system can kill you if you're the quarterback. That's all. That's all. If Tom Brady would have wound up without Belichick, with the Jets, with some stiff, you know, he may have rode the pine and wound up somewhere else. I mean, Brett Favre's a great example of he could have gone nowhere. He didn't because he was given an opportunity, and I guess he sobered up. I don't think he ever admitted to being sober when he was winning with the Packers early on, with Viking and all the other things, alcohol, the things that went on in his life. But I do think you can be buried quickly if bad coaching, bad leadership can bury you.
There's not enough good quarterback play in the league. I mean, look at some of these guys that are still in the league. I mean, Matt Schaub's still a backup quarterback in this league. He was done 6 years ago.
Case Keenum have a job? Yeah. I think he does, right?
But, you know, we're getting a little bit off top because we're bringing this back to Tannehill. But
that's fine. But Tannehill's a great argument to have. I think this is a great bar argument.
But the point I was making wasn't that Tom Brady would win six Super Bowls and be the greatest of all time everywhere else. My point was there were other places he would have wound up that still would have been a great quarterback. Only maybe he would have been Drew Brees winning one title in his career rather than winning six, is my point. But, you know, in the case of Tannehill, you know, he comes to gets a new lease on life and gets away from Adam Gase. As much as, you know, that's kind of proven out to be, maybe he's not the genius that Peyton Manning vouched for him to be way back when you consider what happened in Miami and what's happened with the Jets. And, you know, to your point, you mentioned Sam Darnold, but, you know, it does speak to if you're in a place that has the proper variables. Lamar Jackson is a great example here. There were other teams that liked Lamar Jackson, maybe not in the first round as it played out, but if the Ravens didn't never draft him at the end of the first round, I'm guessing Lamar Jackson's not on the board much longer. He's probably going somewhere in the next 15 picks, let's say, in the second round. But the difference is that a team that would have tried to build an offense in this unique way that the Ravens have? Current struggles aside, you can't argue that it hasn't worked out at an extraordinary level, at least in the regular season. Now, January, playoffs, that legacy will ultimately be defined one way or the other. But if Lamar winds up somewhere else and they try to do to him what the Atlanta Falcons tried to do to Michael Vick 15 years ago, it's probably not working out nearly as well. I'd say he's definitely not winning a league MVP in his second year based off of that. So it does speak to variables matter, coaching matters, the talent around you matters. Yes, ultimately, the greatest quarterbacks can do more with less. That doesn't mean they can do more with that. They can do a lot with nothing. And I think, you know, with Ryan Tannehill and Tennessee, and, you know, I mean, Lamar with the fit here in Baltimore. I mean, it's been special. It doesn't look as special right now, but it's been special. So, you know, in that case with Tennessee coming in next week, I mean, you know, not that the Ravens should be fearing them, or not that I think the Ravens can't win or won't win, but they certainly have to be ready. And You know, again, bringing it back to, you know, Ryan Tannehill will be the first to tell you that, you know, Derrick Henry, you know, he's the train. They're all riding the train for that team. And, yeah, they have success throwing the ball, and Tannehill's put up some big numbers going back to last year, but it begins and ends with Derrick Henry. And if the Ravens don't have Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams up front, you know, that's makes you nervous. How could it not when you look at what New England did on Sunday night?
And bringing it back full circle and an apology to you about Tom Brady, the Ravens couldn't even beat New England without Tom Brady, let alone with Tom Brady. So a rough, wet night. I still feel like a drowned duck after watching that. We're going to be around all week here at Baltimore Positive. Luke's going to be out in Owings Mills, and we'll be monitoring all things Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill. I'm going to be going down to Nashville to talk to all my old Aller friends. And I don't know what else to say. We'll have a lot of Titans talk here this week, a lot of constitutional talk here this week as well. Don Mohler going to join us. Some openings and some closings and strange days ahead as we get ready for pumpkin pie, turkey, and Thanksgiving with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I am Nestor. He is Luke Jones. We are together now at the new WNST.net, which we're calling BaltimorePositive.com. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're back with football and hoping for better times this week here, and certainly a little healthier version of the Ravens.